Well, now this will have to be a fairly condensed presentation of this subject because there isn't a great deal of time left to spend on it. Perhaps it would be as well because a condensed version is often more understandable than perhaps a longer one. First of all, we know from the 13th chapter of the book of Revelation that there is coming a time when there is to be set up the image of the beast. The image of the beast, of course, is a reproduction of the beast, and this is accomplished when the Sunday law becomes a national law in the United States of America, first of all, and then rapidly spreads around the whole wide world. Now, nobody, I don't think, in this audience needs to be shown the proof that the setting up of the image of the beast is accomplished by the making of the national Sunday law. When the churches go to the state and the state enforces that law. Now, in the Desire of Ages, page 121 to 122, there is a statement which provided for us the key to the understanding of these events in the last days. This statement provided a key. The statement says on page 121, because, I'll go back a little, in the last great conflict of the controversy with Satan, those who are loyal to God will see every earthly support cut off. Because they refuse to break his law in obedience to earthly powers, they will be forbidden to buy or sell. It will finally be decreed that they shall be put to death. Now note what it says. It says, because they refuse to break his law in obedience to earthly powers. Now obviously, the law must first be made before there can be a refusal to obey it. Is that obvious? No, Desire of Ages 121 to 122. The law must be made first. And then comes the refusal on the part of God's people to obey a law which will require them to break God's commandments to obey it. And this they do because the laws of the land will invade an area where man has no authority. That is, men have no power to compel us to worship on one day or the other. Now, as a result of this refusal, it says they will be forbidden to buy or sell. Forbidden to buy or sell. It will finally be decreed that they shall be put to death. So the death decree is an ultimate measure taken against the people of God. Now I've found we'll never understand the order of last day events unless we understand this progressive increase in the severity of the image of the beast. In the 1884 edition of The Great Controversy, the page I've just forgotten now, maybe I can find it perhaps in a cross-reference I have here in just a moment, where Sister White says, as milder measures fail, the most oppressive laws will be enacted. The page is 444 in the 1884 Great Controversy. Page 444 in the 1884 Great Controversy. Now note the words. It says, as milder measures fail, the most oppressive laws will be enacted. It becomes stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. Now we're concerned in this study, I think, with placing the judgment of the living in relationship to the latter rain. Let's make that our objective for this particular session, of which, of course, we don't have too much time left, another 45 minutes perhaps. To do this, there are some points we must understand. Let's turn to our Bibles, first of all, shall we? And read together Revelation 14, verse 8. Revelation 14, verse 8. In the scripture it says, and there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, is fallen. What tense is this message? Present tense. And if it's present tense, God speaking only the truth It's obvious that this message cannot be proclaimed until it is a fact of truth. For instance, is God going to send you to say Babylon is fallen when she has not yet fallen? Of course not. So when it says that Babylon is fallen, it means that that message cannot be proclaimed until the fact has been accomplished. And you go back to 1844, when that message was first proclaimed, and what do we find? We find that, first of all, the first angel's message came and was rejected, and that rejection brought about Babylon's fall, and then when Babylon had fallen, the message went forth, Babylon is fallen. Isn't that right? Now turn to Revelation chapter 18, and let's compare that with Revelation 14 verse 8. In Revelation 18 and verse 2 it says, "And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird." Then verse 5, "For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." Now what's the difference between Revelation 14 verse 8 and Revelation 18 verse 2? Any difference?
Yes.
What is it?
Great.
Right. In Revelation 14 verse 8, it is Babylon which has fallen. In Revelation 18, it is Great Babylon which has fallen. Now, as we're told in Great Controversy, page 390, the fall of Great Babylon is accomplished when the churches come to the place where they have reached the ultimate in their opposition to God's law. And we're told plainly, I better read the statement to you on page 389. It says, first of all, the second angel's message, Revelation 14, was first preached in the summer of 1844, and it then had a more direct application to the churches of the United States, where the warning of the judgment had been most widely proclaimed and most generally rejected, and where the declension in the churches had been most rapid. But the message of the second angel did not reach its complete fulfillment in 1844. The churches then experienced the moral fall in consequence of their refusal of the light of the Advent message, but that fall was not complete. In other words, in 1844, they suffered a fall, but that fall was not complete. Sister White now says, as they have continued to reject the special truths for this time, they have fallen lower and lower. And so that descent has been going on and on and on. Now it says, not until this condition, that is the condition when they receive unrighteousness and so on, not until this condition shall be reached, and the union of the church with the world shall be fully accomplished throughout Christendom, will the fall of Babylon be complete. The change is a progressive one, and the perfect fulfillment of Revelation 14:8 is yet future. All right. Now in 1844, we do not find that the church and the state linked hands, did they? Certainly the church joined the world, but not the church and the state. But now Sister White says that when the union of the church with the world shall be fully accomplished, that is when the power of the state shall be given over to the usage of the church, then the fall of Babylon will be what? Complete. And now she says, Revelation 18 points to the time when, as the result of rejecting the threefold warning of Revelation 14, 6-12, the church will have fully reached the condition foretold by the second angel, and the people of God still in Babylon will be called upon to separate from her communion. So Revelation 18 then cannot be preached until that fall is complete. And what makes the fall complete? What makes the fall of Babylon complete? The union of the church and the world must be fully accomplished. Let's turn now to another statement in Great Controversy to bear this out still further. On page 603 and 4 we read the following. After quoting the text from Revelation 18, 1, 2, and 4, Sister White then says, "This scripture points forward to a time when the announcement of the fall of Babylon, as made by the second angel of Revelation 14, is to be repeated, with the additional mention of the corruptions which have been entering the various organizations that constitute Babylon since that message was first given in the summer of 1844. And over the page, we read this. Listen to what it says very carefully. It says, "Of Babylon, at the time brought to view in this prophecy, it is declared, her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. She has filled up the measure of her guilt, and destruction is about to fall upon her." There is coming a time when the Revelation 18 message will go forward. And when that time comes, it can be said as present tense that Babylon's sins have, no longer will, but have reached unto heaven. Now, to make clear this point, I'll read you now a statement from the Bible Commentary or the Review and Herald, November 5, 1889. "The sins of the world will have reached unto heaven when the law of God is made void, when the Sabbath of the Lord is trampled in the dust, and men are compelled to accept in its stead an institution of the papacy through the strong hand of the law of the land." That means then, until that state, let me put it this way, when the Sunday law is passed as an enforced law by the churches, then will have come that point of time when the sins of Babylon will have reached where? Heaven. Will have reached unto heaven. And when the sins of Babylon reach to heaven, then the time comes that is brought to view in the prophecy of Revelation chapter 18. And what is that time? It's the time when the mighty angel comes down to join the third angel as the third angel's message swells to the loud cry. Now, is that point clear before we go on? Let me just repeat it carefully. Point number one. The sins of the world will reach to heaven when the state enforces the church's decree that Sunday must be made a public day of religious worship. That's fact number one. When that time comes and the sins have reached unto heaven, then has come the time brought to view in the prophecy of Revelation chapter 18. And what is the prophecy of Revelation 18 but the picture of this angel which comes down to join the third angel as he is swelling into a loud cry? So therefore, the loud cry and the latter rain cannot begin until the image of the beast has actually been passed. So therefore, if you hear folks say the latter rain is already falling today in some parts of the world, you can be quite certain that those folk don't understand the prophecy of Revelation chapter 18. Now, the image of the beast has been established. Now, in Great Controversy, page 605 and 606, we begin now to read a very, very interesting sequence of events. Our Sister White, point by point, takes up the happenings in the last days. However, before I read this, I want to read you this statement. Because we want to locate the judgment of the living in regard to this order of last day events. It's an extremely important thing that we do this. We're told this. This is from the Bible Commentary, volume 7, page 976. "The Lord has shown me clearly that the image of the beast will be formed before probation closes." And note that carefully. Not at the close of probation, but when? Before probation closes. "For it is to be the great test for the people of God by which their eternal destiny will be decided." And now is quoted in this particular passage, Revelation 13, 11 to 17. And Revelation 13, 11 to 17 speaks about the making of the image, the buy and sell decree, and the death decree. And immediately the statement says, after listing those three things, the image, the buy and sell decree, and the death decree, then Sister White says, "This is the test. that the people of God must have before they are sealed. So what's the order of events then, without looking at the picture here? First of all must come the test. That test, imposed by the image of the beast, must come before we receive that final seal. Correct? Now what obviously must come between the test and the seal? The judgment. Mustn't it? The judgment. The judgment comes between the test and the seal. Now all we have to discover then from the study of the word here is just where in this picture the test comes, and then we'll know that the judgment must come after the test and the seal of God after that. Does it come back here at the image of the beast as some folk teach, or at the close of human probation as, well, we'll leave it and see. In Great Controversy, beginning on page 605, we have a very, very carefully outlined order of events. Begins as follows. The page 605 in Great Controversy. Good. Heretofore, those who presented the truths of the third angel's message have often been regarded as mere alarmists. Their predictions that religious intolerance would gain control in the United States, that church and state would unite to persecute those who keep the commandments of God, have been pronounced groundless and absurd. It has been confidently declared that this land could never become other than what it has been, a defender of religious freedom. But as the question of enforcing Sunday observance is widely agitated, the event so long doubted and disbelieved has seemed to be approaching, and the third message will produce an effect which it could not have had before. Now I believe that today we can see this event approaching, right? And I believe today the third angel's message is already producing an effect which could not have been seen before. In the next paragraph, Sister White speaks of how in the past our reformers start their work and they want to do it quietly. The Spirit of God comes, they're impelled to give the warning, and they can't forbear to speak the words that God gives them. Then she says, and we start in earnest now, thus the message of the third angel will be proclaimed in this same way, as the time comes for it to be given with greatest power. Before I go on, let's make sure we have in our minds to what point of time we have come. Now when, or at what time, is the third angel's message given in the greatest power? The loud cry. When the fourth angel joins the third, right? And that time is at this point of time, not before it, but at the setting up of the image of the beast. Isn't that correct? Good. Now let's see what happens. It says, when this time comes, the Lord will work through humble instruments, leading the minds of those who consecrate themselves to His service. The laborers will be qualified rather by the unction of His Spirit than by the training of literary institutions. Men of faith and prayer will be constrained to go forth with holy zeal, declaring the words which God gives them. The sins of Babylon will be laid open. The fearful results of enforcing the observance of the church by civil authority, the inroads of spiritualism, the stealthy but rapid progress of the papal power, all will be unmasked. By these solemn warnings, the people will be stirred. Thousands upon thousands will listen who have never heard words like these. Let's summarize now what we've been over so far. And the summary is as follows. Point number one, the time comes. Point number two, God calls His people, fills them with the Spirit, sends them forth to expose the sins of Babylon. They give the warning, and thousands upon thousands of people are stirred. That's the order so far, isn't it, in this paragraph? Now, would you agree with me that every event that we have seen in this paragraph cannot happen excepting as being subsequent to the experience before it? Right? The time must come. When it comes, God must call His people. He must fill them with His Spirit, and they can never give the warning. They give the warning, and then when the warning is given, thousands upon thousands of people are stirred. Now listen carefully. In amazement, they hear the testimony that Babylon is the church, fallen because of her errors and sins, because of her rejection of the truth sent to her from heaven. Now what takes place next? It now says, as the people go to their former teachers with the eager inquiry, are these things so? Are these things so? The ministers present fables, prophesy smooth things to soothe their fears and quiet the awakened conscience. Now you tell me, what is the first reaction then, or the first method or measure which is taken against the message? Is it persecution? Argument. Let's look at that. Let's put it down here. Get it clear. The message goes forth. And the first measure used against it is argument. Let me read it again. It says, as the people go to their former teachers with the eager inquiry, are these things so? The ministers present fables, prophesy smooth things to soothe their fears and quiet the awakened conscience. Now isn't that argument, debate, reasoning that's used against the message? Therefore, at this stage, are the people of God yet suffering in consequence of giving the message? Are they? They're not. Has the great test come upon them yet? Hasn't even begun to come upon them yet. But has the loud cry started? All right, now let's read on. But since many refuse to be satisfied with the mere authority of men and demand the plain, thus saith the Lord, the popular ministry, like the Pharisees of old, filled with anger as their authority is questioned, will denounce the message as of Satan and stir up the sin-loving multitudes to revile and persecute those who proclaim it. So when the argument fails, then comes what? Persecution. And now which comes first? The loud cry or the persecution? All right. Now isn't this persecution the beginning of the great final test? And persecution in the sense of, well, you and I have already suffered this kind of persecution, where people won't talk to us and they won't have us in their houses and call us all kinds of names and so forth. Why, we've already suffered that kind of persecution. And that's no real test yet compared to a buy and sell decree, and worst of all, a death decree, which comes down at the very end of the picture. Let's see now how things get tougher and tougher. As the controversy extends into new fields, and the minds of the people are called to God's downtrodden law, Satan is astir. The power attending the message will only madden those who oppose it. The clergy will put forth almost superhuman efforts to shut away the light lest it should shine upon their flocks. By every means at their command, they will endeavor to suppress the discussion of these vital questions. The church appeals to the strong arm of civil power, and in this work, papists and Protestants unite. As the movement for Sunday enforcement becomes more bold and decided, the law will be invoked against commandment keepers. And the word invoke means to call in. So the law which was passed back here is now called in against commandment keepers. The next sentence says, they will be threatened with fines and imprisonment. Now ask yourself this question. If you were a judge and you had before you a person who couldn't buy and sell, would you threaten him with a fine? Wouldn't make sense, would it? Wouldn't make sense. So the very fact that at this stage here there is a threat of fines proves that the buy and sell decree is still yet a future measure to be taken against the people of God. Notice how, as a result of the giving of the message, the pressure increases and increases and increases. First of all, there's argument, then there's persecution, then there are court cases with a threat of fines and imprisonment, and then comes the buy and sell decree, and ultimately the death decree. So it gets stiffer and stiffer right down the line. They'll be threatened with fines and imprisonment, and some will be offered positions of influence and other rewards and advantages as inducements to renounce their faith. But their steadfast answer is, show us from the Word of God our error. The same plea that was made by Luther under similar circumstances. Those who are arraigned before the courts make a strong vindication of the truth, and some who hear them are led to take their stand to keep all the commandments of God. Thus light will be brought before thousands who otherwise would know nothing of these truths. The next paragraph speaks about the persecution getting stiffer. We find it speaks about exile, slavery, and imprisonment. The next paragraph now is very interesting. It says, as the storm approaches. Now what storm? The storm that is gathering as a result of the power of this message. So the storm is approaching and the great storm bursts down here at the very end of the story. The storm bursts down here. The great final test comes, I'll quote Christ W. Lessons, page 412. The great final test comes at the close of human probation when it'll be too late for the soul's need to be supplied. I read on now. As the storm approaches, a large class who have professed faith in the third angel's message, but have not been sanctified through obedience to the truth, abandon their position and join the ranks of the opposition. Now some people have been apt to think that these are Seventh-day Adventists who at the present time have wandered away. But remember this, that before the loud cry begins, there is the shaking, which is caused by the preaching of the Laodicean message, which is the 1888 message. Isn't that right? And Sister White says that this brings out two classes. The little company of servants who will give the message, and the rest of them who are shaken out, and of whom Sister White says they were left behind in darkness, and I lost sight of them. So as the storm approaches here, the people who will be shaken out here are not those who were previously shaken out here. But instead, they are people by the thousands who've come in during the loud cry, foolish virgins, joining with the wise, and when the storm bursts upon them, they flee back to the churches from which they came. Now those of you who were here the other day for the study on the 10 virgins of Matthew 25 will understand that picture very, very clearly and distinctly. The 50,000 who, remember that we had the shaking in the church in between the midnight cry and the shut door, October 22, 1844, 50,000 people came out. And when the great final test came and the second disappointment, what happened to the vast majority of these who'd come out during the midnight cry? They went back. When the storm of ridicule and abuse burst upon them, the majority of those who come out during this period went back. Now what did Sister White say? The parable has been and will be fulfilled. How? To the very letter. So this large class who abandoned their position here are not Seventh-day Adventists who are in the message today. They are people who come in during this period as the 50,000 did then. And when this storm bursts upon them, the majority of them go back just as they did in 1844. Yeah, just as it did back in 1844. No, 18. Well, I said 18 in Australian, you see. I'll send a pair of kangaroo ears over for you. They're shaped like this. They're shaped like this. I'll do that. As a storm approaches then, a large class who have professed faith in the third angel's message, but have not been sanctified through obedience to the truth, abandon their position and join the ranks of the opposition. By uniting with the world and partaking of its spirit, they have come to view matters in nearly the same light, and when the test is brought, they are prepared to choose the easy, popular side. Men of talent and pleasing address, who once rejoiced in the truth, employ their powers to deceive and to mislead souls. They become the most bitter enemies of their former brethren. When Sabbath keepers are brought before the courts to answer for their faith, These apostates are the most efficient agents of Satan to misrepresent and accuse them, and by false reports and insinuations to stir up the rulers against them. Now, in this time of persecution, the faith of the Lord's servants will be tried. Now, this expression, in this time of persecution, needs to be very, very carefully considered, because the time of persecution spoken of is right down here at the end of the picture, not back here at the image of the beast. And that's evident by the words that follow. Now let's read it again. In this time of persecution, the faith of the Lord's servants will be tried. They have faithfully given the warning. So when this time of persecution comes, what about the loud cry? It's virtually over with, because it says they have given the warning. So this time of persecution then follows or comes after, and as we shall shortly read, entirely as the result of the giving of the loud cry message. Let me read it to you. God's Spirit moving upon their hearts has constrained them to speak. Stimulated with holy zeal and with a divine impulse strong upon them, they entered upon the performance of their duties, listen, without coldly calculating the consequences of speaking to the people the word which the Lord had given them. Now, the word consequences, they have not consulted their temporal interests, nor sought to preserve their reputation or their lives. Yet, and here this sentence is so clear, you can't misunderstand it, yet, when the storm of opposition and reproach bursts upon them, all right? When the storm bursts, what do they say? Some, overwhelmed with consternation, will be ready to exclaim, had we foreseen the consequences of our words, we would have held our peace. Now, what then are the consequences of their words? This tremendous storm of opposition. Which storm of opposition does what? It tests the faith of the Lord's servants. Now I read on. They are hedged in with difficulties. Satan assails them with fierce temptations. The work which they have undertaken seems far beyond their ability to accomplish. They are threatened with destruction. They are threatened with destruction. So we've now come to what? The death decree. The threat of destruction. Now, a sad mistake has been made by some who think that the experience of the shaking in early writings is the same experience as Joshua and the angel. But a moment of consideration will show us that they're two entirely and separate experiences. One which must come before the latter rain, and the other can only come in consequence of the latter rain. Let's consider a moment this fact. Now, the Laodicean message comes to what kind of people? The Laodicean message comes to what kind of people? Laodiceans. Right, Laodiceans. And that message makes a shaking or a division in the Laodicean church. Can you possibly give me a single example from history? Can you possibly conceive of a church which is being reformed from within and preoccupied with its own internal reformation, being even able to so exert a pressure on the outside world as to cause the world to persecute it even to the death? Of course not. That church has to be shaken from within. The one class, if you remember the chapter on the shaking, those who agonize for the victory till they get it, they come out and they get unity, and they get victory, and they get separation. And when they have got that, then follows the loud cry. And now we see in this particular chapter that the loud cry brings the anger of Satan against them until, as a result of the loud cry, they're threatened with destruction from without. See the point? That's clear, isn't it? So the shaking of early writings has to be here, and the Joshua and the angel experience has to be here. Because in the Joshua and the angel experience, they are threatened with destruction from the outside world, but that is not the case with the shaking here. Now we're plainly told that the shaking of early writings is followed by the latter rain, And we're just as plainly told here in great controversy that the threat of destruction comes as a result of the loud cry. So here's the shaking of early writings, then the loud cry, then the Joshua and the angel experience. So where does the judgment come? It comes, we know it comes, because the Joshua and the angel experience is a picture of the peculiar experience of God's people in the great day of final atonement. Isn't that right? So the judgment of the living comes down at the close of human probation. And it can't come anywhere else. If you're going to teach good sound Adventist theology and the third angel's message. Come back to our statement again, which says, this is the test that the people of God must have before they are sealed. The test of the image of the beast. Now, if any of you folk have ever been engineers or builders, you will know that, let's suppose now that one of us was going to build a bridge. And we required, shall we say, 1,000 volts. Or even just one bolt. 12 inches long, 1/2 inch thick. And this bolt had to stand a certain pressure in the bridge itself. All right. Now, the bridge is being built and the bolt is placed in position. And at first it only has to bear a light load, maybe 1,000 pounds. But as the bridge progresses and more steel is piled onto the structure, then the stress on that bolt becomes greater and greater and greater. Now the fact that that bolt is able to bear the first light pressure, does that prove it'll bear the maximum pressure? Of course not. Definitely not. Now, if we pass the test of arguments here, which is very mild, does that prove we'll pass the persecution? No. And if we pass the persecution, does that prove in itself that we can pass the threat of fines and imprisonment? Of course not. And the buy and sell decree. But those who stand stiffly for God under the face of the ultimate test, then what have they passed? They have passed the test of the image of the beast. Isn't that right? And God has the security of knowing that they'll be faithful even to the death, and go into the kingdom. So Sister White says in Christ Epic Lessons, page 412, the great final test comes at the close of human probation, when it'll be too late for the soul's need to be supplied. Now, time is running out very shortly, so let me just give you now one or two quick evidences to support what we've just presented for you here in this particular study so far. The next point I'd like to make is a statement or two from Christ Object Lessons. I hope I can find it because this copy, once again, isn't the right paging. It's 122, I believe, in the Standard Edition, or maybe it's about there, 122, in the chapter on the net. And I want you to notice very carefully the exact wording of this particular statement. Sister White says, when the mission of the gospel is completed. Now you tell me what work and what message completes the mission of the gospel. This message or the loud cry, isn't it? Is the mission of the gospel finished at the image of the beast? Sure, surely. Sure. Is the mission of the gospel finished here at the image of the beast? Of course not. Is it finished at the end of the loud cry? Certainly. And so Sister White says, when the mission of the gospel is completed, the judgment will accomplish the work of separation. Christ Object Lessons 122. 122. On the next page, she says, again, these parables teach that there is to be no probation after the judgment. When the work of the gospel is completed, there immediately follows a separation between the good and the evil, and the destiny of each class is forever fixed. Absolutely. The destiny isn't fixed back here. The destiny is fixed here. Now I ask you, could you wish for a plainer statement? Let me read it again. When the work of the gospel is completed, there immediately follows the separation between the good and the evil, and the destiny of each class is forever fixed. And you tell me this, in what is the destiny of each class forever fixed excepting the judgment? Isn't that right? The judgment fixes the destiny. So if the destiny of each class is forever fixed down here, at the end of the loud cry, then the judgment must most certainly convene at the end of the loud cry. Definitely. Surely. I just read that one. Okay. Again, these parables teach that there is to be no probation after the judgment. See? No probation after the judgment. And obviously, speaking here of the judgment of the living, because it's the living that we're concerned with. That's right. Which is what some people teach. Mm-hmm. That's right. Uh-huh. Exactly. Now, in the book Christ Obey Lessons again, I'm labouring on the difficulties here because this is an odd page in the one I'm borrowing. We're told, if I can find it in the chapter on the tares, but it plainly says that the wheat and the tares are to grow together until the harvest, and the harvest is the end of probationary time. Yeah, I know what the paging is in the regular edition, but this isn't the regular edition. I just want to get the exact words if I can find them. Anyway, the wording is, as best I can remember it, the wheat and the tares are to grow together until the harvest. And the harvest is the close of probationary time. That's a different application of the same parable. Yes, no, that's not it either. I'm sorry. This is my copy, and it's, I know where it is on mine without reading the whole chapter through, but I just have to sort of... Here it is. The tares and the wheat are to grow together until the harvest, and the harvest is the end of probationary time, page 73 in the regular edition. Now, some teach that the end of probationary time for a certain class of people comes at the setting up of the image of the beast. And that therefore, those who go forth and give the loud cry are wise virgins only. That beyond this point, there is no commingling of wheat and tares. They're just the one class, not two. And that's how it would have to be. If this was the end of probationary time for a certain class of people, that is those who give the loud cry, that is, if those who are going to give the loud cry have passed their probationary time, are finally sealed, judged and sealed and secure for eternity, then for them the separation of the wheat and the tares must have come. Isn't that right? You'd agree with that? All right, let me read you a statement now which proves otherwise in the book Testimonies to Ministers, page 300. Page 300. It here says, there will be those among us. Now, the us here, of course, refers to whoever will be the true people of God in this time. Where will this class of people be? Among us, remember. There will be those among us who will always want to control the work of God, to dictate even what movement shall be made. And what class of people are they, wise or foolish virgins? Foolish. Now listen, they'll be there among us when the work goes forward under the direction of the angel who joins the third angel in the message to be given to the world. Now, what time is that? When does the work go forward under the direction of the other angel but during the loud cry period? And this statement distinctly says that during that period of time there will be those who want to dictate and control, commingled with the pure and true people of God, which is but to say that the wheat and the tares are still together. And if the wheat and the tares are still together, then we have not yet come to the judgment. Isn't that right? Clear as can be. Now, one final point. There's a great deal more, of course, we could present on this, but one final point. The just shall live how? For how long? Well, that is true. Right through all eternity, true. But in the most particular sense, we're not going to know that we're finally saved until the voice of God speaks from heaven and announces our deliverance under the fifth and sixth plague. Isn't that right? Until that time, we have to live by raw and naked faith. Let's take now the theory which says that when the image of the beast is set up, those who give the loud cry would have been finally judged and finally sealed, never more to fall, eternally secure. Now, if only those who have been judged and sealed and made eternally secure can receive the power of the latter rain, then the reception of that power would be a guarantee or an evidence to us that we were eternally secure. Now, some may argue, of course, we won't know that we've got the latter rain, but such is not a sound argument, because did not Peter know on the day of Pentecost that they had the former rain, the fulfillment of Joel 2? He said, this is that which the prophet Joel has spoken. And by the inspiration of the same Spirit, we will as truly know that we have received the outpouring of the latter rain. Won't we? Why, sure we will. So if the theory is right, that the judgment must come, and we must be sealed, made eternally secure before we can get the latter rain, and the moment I get the latter rain, I can say, praise the Lord, I'm eternally secure. And from that moment on, I don't live by faith anymore. Isn't that right? You got me wrong. I said, if this theory was correct. Yeah. I said, if this theory is correct. Yeah, good, that's kangaroo ears. If this theory is correct, then it would mean that from the loud cry on, we would never have to live by faith anymore. Now, isn't that turning the gospel upside down? Sure, that's making an easy way to heaven. That's right. And he's a good Bible student. And if this theory was true, he'd know it to be true. Satan laughs at our folly, for he knows what truth is. Testaments to Ministers, page 409 tells us that. 409. But right down here, after the death decree, Satan does not know that our cases have been decided, whereas if the loud cry was the evidence we had a decided case, then he would certainly know down here that our cases had been decided. Of course, some folk argue to me, well, we all know when the seven last plagues begin, so we'll know then that it's all over. But I ask you the question, will you know when the seven last plagues begin? How will you know when the seven last plagues will begin? You won't know, because the calamities and disasters are swelling all the way through, and the seven last plagues simply blend with the plagues before the end. These blend into the ones after, and you won't know where one ends and the other begins. Sure, and we won't know. Well, that's just a few thoughts in the order of last day events. Obviously, of course, there's much more involved, such as aspects of the sanctuary teaching, the final atonement, victory over sin, Joshua and the angel, the shaking here and so forth. But at least that gives to you a few facts upon which to build your study, and plainly shows that the great final test comes only as a result of the latter rain. For giving you that message. That imposes the great final test, which we must have before we can be judged and sealed and made eternally secure.